This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch the show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Donald Trump's appalling responses to the Nazi violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, are being widely interpreted as a nod to his white voter base. With the resignations of CEOs from his business advisory councils and the eventual disbanding of the councils, it appears as though this open embrace of racist values is just too much for corporate elites to bear. But there are some members of the 1% that embrace alt-right ideology and who may not abandon the president. My guest is Sarah Anderson, director of the Global Economy Project and co-editor of inequality.org at the Institute for Policy Studies, and she recently wrote about this issue. Welcome to the program, Sarah.
Thanks for having me on.
So your piece is entitled The Alt-Right and the 1%. And I think it's very easy, particularly for members of the so-called alt-right, to dismiss corporate elites as part of the entire liberal elite. You know, they lump in the entire left with corporations and corporate CEOs. And indeed, a lot of corporate CEOs do have sort of socially liberal values, but not all. And in your piece, you profile three men in particular. Let's start with Robert Mercer, who has been a strong supporter of Donald Trump. Who is Robert Mercer, and why might he be cheering on the president's comments on Charlottesville from the sidelines?
Right. Well, Robert Mercer is someone who you will never catch on camera waving a swastika flag. But I do think that he is the kind of person in the elite that Trump was also playing to with his press conference on Tuesday. So Robert Mercer is a quite secretive, camera shy, interview shy guy who is a co-CEO of Renaissance Technologies, a $50 billion hedge fund. And he has been using his enormous wealth to both fund candidates like Trump. He was one of Trump's largest supporters with more than $15 million going into Trump's presidential campaign. And he's also been using it to fund media that is promoting the alt-right view of the world. So he is one of three owners of Breitbart News. This is the media outlet that the former editor of Breitbart and now a top aide to Trump, Steve Bannon, has explicitly said is a platform for the alt-right. And you might be surprised to hear just what a big force this is. During the election campaign, they were getting something like 23 million unique visitors a month. And I am something of a Civil War history buff. And so for years now, I've been reading what has been written about the whole Civil War legacy. And Breitbart has really been out there over the past 2 years since the massacre in South Carolina of the 9 African-American church members by a white supremacist, which really energized the movement to remove Confederate symbols. They've been out there defending these symbols with very inflammatory rhetoric. I quoted an article in my piece by someone who said that people who are trying to remove these symbols from public property are that it's part of a campaign of cultural genocide. And so this is the kind of inflammatory language that you just have to think has really helped stoke the fires of this energized white supremacy movement.
Does Mercer's support enable Trump to not have to rely on corporate support? Because almost from day one, Trump began campaigning for his next election. And if with the likes of Mercer's hedge fund financially supporting him, maybe he doesn't need the CEOs of Uber, yeah, et cetera.
Yeah, I have to say, I was so encouraged to see what's happened in the past few days with the CEOs stepping back from these advisory councils to the point where they had to be disbanded, with specific statements coming out of people who are also very close to Trump, like Steve Schwartzman at Blackstone. They are taking a stand. We might wish that they were going further, but they're trying to indicate which side they're on in this fight. And And in my piece, I go into a couple of other leaders that are not making that clear. Another huge backer of Trump, who, you know, maybe will still be there with him financially if he does try to run for re-election, Peter Thiel from he's a co-founder of PayPal. Then he made another billion or so as an early investor in Facebook. And he doesn't play the same exact role with Mercer, where you can, you know, Mercer's funding Breitbart. So that's just a really clear connection. But Peter Thiel has also said some really disturbing things about how he doesn't believe that that freedom and democracy are compatible. He was scheduled to speak at a major conference last year that has featured speakers like Spencer, who was one of the stars of the Charlottesville rally. So he's somebody who doesn't mind hobnobbing with the alt-right. And he has been asked by the mainstream media. I mean, this is a guy who gave Trump $1.25 million for his campaign. He spoke at the convention. He was on the transition team. He did a press conference here at the very elite National Press Club to support Trump. So a very high-profile Trump supporter. He will not comment on Charlottesville or what Trump said. And so, you know, he's one of the people out there, very high profile Trump supporter in the business community. He's a big time venture capitalist now. He is not willing to show us which side he's on, which says a lot, I guess.
And in your piece, Sarah, you mentioned this essay that he wrote in 2009 for the Cato Institute he basically promoted or tried to explain his strongly libertarian leanings and said that he believed that freedom and democracy are incompatible. What does he mean by that?
Yeah, it's a really trippy essay. You might want to read it just to read some really bizarre stuff. He states in the essay that there's nowhere in the world right now where you can truly be free because, capitalism has been poisoned by these efforts for government to intervene. And so you can't truly be free without complete, I guess, free markets, no regulation, no nothing. And he also, another comment in there that has gotten a lot of attention is he lamented the extension of voting rights to women, because he said women tend not to really go for his kind of politics. And then about a huge chunk of the piece is about how he wants to escape then to a place, a utopian place where he can be truly free. And that might have to be in outer space or settlements on the ocean. And so there's a lot of really unusual stuff in there. But here's a person who, you know, the guys with the tiki torches in the streets are dangerous, but he's a different kind of dangerous. He has enough money to fund lawsuits, to back candidates, to really help legitimize this kind of very disturbing ideology.
So Peter Thiel and Robert Mercer are directly linked to Trump, but you also bring up a third person named Daniel Loeb. Who is Loeb, and why is he also somebody to be, or the kind of one percenter to be concerned about when we think about a president promoting racism?
Yeah, so he's another billionaire hedge funder guy. I think Forbes says he's worth more than $3 billion.
Wow.
And he's also a huge political player, but on the Democratic side. So he has been giving megabucks to people like Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York. But he also has this penchant for racist language. His big pet issue is charter schools. And he has repeatedly gone after opponents of charter schools, defenders of traditional public schools, like the teachers' unions and like an African-American state legislator in New York, who he said had done more to harm poor people of color than the Klan. And he has made those kind of comments repeatedly. He got into a tiff with a competing CEO who he used a derogatory racial slur to refer to him. It was a man of Indian descent. And so, again, he you can't, you know, find a money trail probably between Daniel Loeb and Richard Spencer necessarily, but these are the kind of person in his position, you know, triple billionaire, who is using language that is an effort to normalize the idea that the KKK was better than the teachers' unions, that somehow lynchings, an organization that has, you know, killed thousands of African Americans, is somehow better than people who are defending public schools. That is dangerous rhetoric that should not be encouraged, that should be fought against. And it's the kind of thing that makes people get the idea that it's okay to go out and stomp around with tiki torches and Nazi flags.
So, Sarah, how important is it to emphasize, while we are talking about this bizarre sort of race war moment that we find ourselves in, to remind ourselves that the issue of economic inequality should enter the equation, because we know economic inequality disproportionately hurts people of color. The Wall Street CEOs that abandoned Trump may be against overt white supremacist language, but they aren't doing much about ending economic inequality.
Right. Well, you see,
which feeds racism, we should say.
Yeah, and you see the extreme power that you have in the hands of so few. That's what makes these men so dangerous at the top. That's why we need to be paying as much attention to them as we are paying to attention to people in the streets. And so I'm really hoping that in the response to the horror that was Charlottesville, that we see a boost of support for groups like Black Lives Matter and Color of Change, that are really, you know, where race is really central, but other groups where the racial issues are also integrated, the groups working to reduce economic inequality. There's a huge tax fight coming towards us that has a real racial dimension to it, because the proposals from the Republicans are all going to be about helping out the Robert Mercers and the people at the top. And I also hope that it'll breathe more energy into the fight for campaign finance reform and reining in the power of corporations. Because when you have scary people at the pinnacle of power in America, in a system that allows such unlimited economic, you know, influence over our political system, it is really disturbing.
And of course, you know, it's tempting to be able to say, it's just class issues and not race, or it's just race issues and not class. Obviously, these are two very strong forces in society that have some overlap, but are also, you know, you can't solve racism just by, if we were to eliminate inequality overnight, and probably vice versa as well. These are issues that do need to be tackled separately and together. So, Sarah, when we look at the kind of response that Trump has elicited with his language, how should we hold corporations and corporate elites and Wall Streeters accountable? You know, they have so much disposable income to be able to influence our electoral system that people like Daniel Loeb can pour his money into the Democratic Party. All of those people who left the Business Advisory Council could simply say, well, we're going to choose to play ball with only the Democratic Party right now. So their power remains intact simply by choosing one major party over another.
Right. We can't give the impression that Trump is the whole problem here, or even that the Republican Party is the whole problem here. And if we could just get rid of Trump, then the problem will be solved. This is a problem that really permeates the political system and means that people often think twice before speaking out, because they're wondering how it'll play with their donors. We need to be fighting on all of these fronts, like I said, and curtailing the influence of money in our political system. system, I'm hoping people are understanding more and more how that is really everybody's issue. It's the thing that should really unite all of us and be deeply integrated into campaigns for racial and economic justice.
Well, we'll post a link to your recent piece on inequality.org called The Alt-Right and the 1%. Sarah, thanks as always for joining us today.
Thank you.
My guest is Sarah Anderson, director of the Global Economy Project and co-editor of inequality.org at the Institute for Policy Studies. And we've been discussing how some members of the 1% are quite comfortable with alt-right ideology. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.